by you.
Good morning. It's just after 9 o'clock. It's Friday, the 27th of May, 2016. My name's Jamie Veitch. I'm your presenter for the next hour for Sheffield Live's business and social enterprise programme, Business Live. We're broadcasting live on 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org. This show will also be available as a podcast from the Sheffield Live website. Talking about podcasts, if you missed last week's programme, which featured Neville Martin of the Federation for Small Businesses, he described a northern powerhouse as akin to hot air, said the government were taking a divide and conquer approach to northern cities. You can catch up with that podcast on the Sheffield Live website. Simply go to shows, find Business Live, find a show from Friday the 20th of May, and you can hear a 30-minute in-depth interview with Neville Martin of the Federation for Small Businesses there. He also covered regulation, red tape and measures announced in the Queen's speech. Last Friday's programme also featured Hannah Gerade, founder and director of The Great Escape, Sheffield's biggest real-life escape room game. And it featured Rena, Sabrine, Parveen and Liam from a fantastic social enterprise called Upscribe. A real treat in store, so go find the podcast if you missed the show. Now, in today's programme, we're talking gardening. We have the MD of a local garden centre, but he's gone national. He's going to be telling us all about National Children's Garden Week, what it is, why it's happening, and that's coming up soon. So we'll be talking with Neil Grant of Ferndale Garden Centre shortly. Before we do, a couple of quick announcements in terms of what's going on in business and social enterprise. Around 250 jobs are indeed set to be lost in Sheffield after the Department for Business, Innovation and Skills have now confirmed plans to close their office in the city and move the work to London. The government has said that relocating to the capital will help save £350 million by 2020 and that staff in Sheffield will be offered financial help if they choose to relocate to the capital. Sheffield Social Enterprise Network are seeking a new chair. So if you're involved in social enterprise and you want to be involved even more and look at the work of and see how you can support social enterprise, then get involved. Find out more at the Sheffield Social Enterprise website. And if you're a Social Enterprise UK are doing a State of the Sector survey right now. You can find out more at their website, which is socialenterprise.org.uk. A couple of events coming up soon. The Wasco Brown Enterprising Partners event takes place in Barnsley on the 7th of June. I'll be there. Last time they ran the event, it took place in Sheffield, about 120 people. Around 60 of those came from businesses, around 60 from social enterprises and charities, and the event was all about collaboration, cross-pollination and learning from one another. You can find out more if you look up Enterprising Partners on Eventbrite. Now, as ever, we'd welcome your views. You can get involved with this programme. Pitch yourself, put yourself forward as a potential guest. Get in touch, tell us something that you think we should be covering on the programme. All you need to do is email jamie@sheffieldlive.org. Find me on Twitter, Jamie Veitch. Find Sheffield Live on Twitter as well, Sheffield Live, or text 07904 272 200. Whether you're running, whether you're starting a business or a social enterprise, or whether you're thinking about it, we're always keen to hear from you. So before we turn to our first guest, we'll get Neil Grant on the phone in a moment or two. We'll have a quick track of music. This is Business Live on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org. That was Amy Mann, Wise Up, and I'm joined on the line now by Neil Grant of Ferndale Garden Centre. Neil, good morning.
Morning, Jamie.
Thanks for joining me today. And, well, children love growing plants, love being in the garden, but can be impatient growers wanting instant results. So I was really, really intrigued when I heard about National Children's Garden Week, which you've set up. So Ferndale Garden Centre near Sheffield, you're on the radio quite a lot. You've been on this programme and on BBC Radio Sheffield as a garden expert numerous times and presenting a phone-in. Where did the idea come from for National Children's Garden Week, Neil?
It sort of evolved, really. We've spotted for years that children do love gardening, and I was drifting thoughts, which I often do, and I just thought, if there was going to be a week that you could get children really involved, when would it be? And it came to me very quickly that actually this next half term week that's coming up is probably pretty much nationally the only week in the year or in the spring that you could give a child a tomato plant and they could put it straight in their garden. Because with them being tender, if you do them too early, they can't go in the garden, they die, or they just don't grow. Mm. So came up with the idea, floated with a few people, got a children's toy supplier, a garden like toolkit supplier interested. And it went from there, really. We had a very soft launch last year. Second year this year was still gently encouraging. We've probably got about 40, 50 garden centres up and down the country involved this year. And it's just a matter, it's a real weird one, because actually this next week for most garden centres is the busiest week of the year.
So busy time
you'd,
anyway.
You'd argue this is the daftest time to do it, but actually sometimes you just have to do these things.
Yeah, quite. And so that means that children who are sort of perhaps being dragged to the garden centre, if they feel that this week, as their parents or carers take them along to a garden centre full of enthusiasm, children don't. But this way, your garden centre Ferndale and participating garden centres across the country have something something really exciting that children can get involved with, and because you're talking tomato plants, it's something something tangible and something pretty fast as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just tomatoes.
No.
You can grow your own popcorn, you know, sow your name in, with some grass seed and things like that. They're not complicated, they're simple things to do. But I have a firm belief that actually if you can get children involved in gardening early enough, it potentially could change their life. And there's quite a lot of research coming out now that's saying that actually gardening, both from a stress-relieving point of view, but also from learning to eat vegetables early on, could actually change the way we live in this country. Now, that's a grand claim, but there's a lot of other research coming out. And our industry started to term accidentally the Natural Health Service. Mm-hmm. Because there are lots of things with gardening that will actually improve people's lives.
Yes, so gardening has a massive impact in terms of well-being and health, beyond the obvious in terms of eating fresh vegetables, delicious fresh vegetables. It's actually about positive impact on well-being.
Yeah, I mean, in Sweden, they've been prescribing for some people gardening, but from the doctors.
Right, fantastic.
It's now starting to gain a bit of momentum over here. There's our trade association, which has got behind what I'm doing with National Children's Gardening Week, is pulling together lots of different research and to try and actually show that the research is out there, but it's never been pulled together. So, yeah, you know, it benefits them all. If we can get children involved early, it could make them live a healthier life. It's fair to say that children get to 12, and they switch off pretty much.
Mm.
But under 12, they don't feel too much dragged, and if they've got something that they can do in a garden centre or when they get home, fantastic.
Superb. And, of course, you don't actually have to have access to a garden, or a massive garden, or even any garden at all to grow things, do you?
No, that's right. You know, even with a balcony or a windowsill, you know, like you can get these little tomatoes called tumbling tomatoes. They just don't get much bigger than a foot and produce lots of small tomatoes, you know, and picking those every few days and eating them, fantastic.
Yes, yeah, lovely. I mean, I've grown chilies on my on my windowsills in the past and enjoyed those, and tomatoes indoors even as well.
That's right.
Yeah, excellent. So you've got 50 or so participating garden centres involved with this. So so how are they getting involved then? What are they doing?
Well, I decided the easiest thing to do was to let them decide what they wanted to do. One garden centre last year had over 6,000 children through in a week. It's a big garden centre, to be fair, but they put on a princess week where they got a company local to them to have girls dressed up in Disney princess outfits, and they did all sorts of things, and some are doing things with food. Some are just doing a simple nine garden centres, sort of Midlands and South, putting on a trail around the garden centre where when they've completed the trail they get a free packet of seeds. And it's just simple things or complicated things. You know, we're doing something every day. Some are just doing one thing through the whole week.
Right, great. So depends in what way other participating garden centres want to get involved. But you've given them resources, a logo, a sort of kit, if you like, as well.
Yeah, literally only the logo and the something to hang the name on, and then that then starts to get more publicity as an event, and then the garden centre can pick and choose what they want to do. It's not meant to be something that, as an industry, we struggle with, but it's meant to be something just to encourage children.
Yeah, quite. Great stuff. And as you say, this is coming at one of the biggest, if not the biggest, times of the year, busiest times of the year for you at Ferndale and for most garden centres.
Yes.
Bank holiday weekend, of course.
Bank holiday weekend, school holiday straight after it.
Yeah, quite. And everyone's kind of people are getting out there in the garden, knowing what they want to get done and so on. And so busy time ahead. It's also... it's also busy this weekend here in Sheffield Food Festival as well.
It is.
And that's something that, lots of us enjoy. Plans yourself?
Yeah, I'm actually going to be down there for 3 days doing National Children's Gardening Week. We're going to do seed sowing and stuff like that, amongst a few other things, because we can be on the end of the food chain or the beginning of the food chain. You know, so whether you're going out for a posh meal or whether you're growing yourself to cook it at home, it's great the way they've incorporated the whole range of the whole food thing. So, and the nice thing for me being in the city centre is meeting people who don't have gardens and encouraging them to plant on balconies and, you know, decide what to do depending on how high they are. And again, you know, good thing for children and adults alike.
Yeah, quite. Great. And so really, really nice for you to have a prominent slot there as well, prominent position there in something that gets enormous amounts of footfall. Superb. Good.
Yeah, well, I've been to the last few years and it's a very busy weekend and a great weekend for the city, actually.
Yeah, an excellent weekend for the city, isn't it? It's really good in terms of collaboration, lots of independent businesses. You get questioned by listeners on BBC Radio Sheffield, our friends down the road at BBC Radio Sheffield. You're their resident garden expert. What are the biggest problems or questions that people have with their gardens and they want your advice on? What things come up over and over again?
It tends to be pruning, pests and diseases, and can you suggest something? Okay, the tricky ones from the radio is, can you identify this plant?
That's a test, isn't it?
Them tend to be not too bad. Oh, and people regularly want to know whether they can move something.
Right.
And obviously there are times of year when it's good and when it's not. But it tends to fall around those few topics, really. But there's always variations on it. And we'll always get the odd one or two that you're not expecting. And that's the thing about live radio, as you know, you never know what's coming around the corner.
Absolutely. Very, very exciting. Good stuff. And Ferndale seems to be going from strength to strength. What do you know now that you wish you'd known? Any advice you can pass on to people in business? Any words of wisdom?
Yeah, I think I wish I'd had more courage to come up with some of the ideas that I had 20 years ago and put them into action, even though they looked stupid. Because I think there's in many business people, there's an air of entrepreneurship and ideas and innovation. And if we're not careful, our own personality goes, everyone's going to think that's stupid. But actually, it doesn't matter if everybody thinks that's stupid, because quite often that's how the major breakthroughs come. And I think we've learnt a lot from the likes of Steve Jobs and Bill Gates and people like that, and Richard Branson, for big names, but lots of smaller names have just gone with an idea and said, I really believe in this, and pulled their teams along with them. And I wish I'd done more of that earlier.
That's about, I suppose, having the courage in your convictions, is it?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, when you get a recession, it's hard. But I think those are probably the times when it's even more important to stand out for doing something a bit different.
Right, yeah. Don't try and be the same as everybody else in your sector or industry, I suppose.
I mean, I learnt a long time ago that everything that we do and everything that most people do, somebody else is already doing it as well. Mm-hmm. Maybe cheaper, maybe better, but not everybody can come up with a twist on it. National Children's Gardening Week is an example of that, really, that it's taking something that's already there and saying, well, how can we look at it in a different way and make it a bit of fun? Because that's the other thing I probably learned. It's got to keep it fun. Well, for me anyway. is not fun, it doesn't happen.
Well, that's a good philosophy in business and in life, isn't it?
Yeah.
I suppose too many business owners get bogged down and can't see the fun, can't find the fun in their business,
That's very true. Yeah. And I think probably as you grow, that becomes more of an issue, because the thing that you started off being passionate about and the thing that gave you the get up and go in the morning starts to be somebody else's job while you have to do all the other things like personnel and tax and stuff like that. And I think if businesses, as they grow, can find ways of keeping that part alive and actually letting other people do the grind. It's not always easy when you're starting, but the things that have to be done, give them to somebody who's happy to do them if you can.
Right, excellent. So bring people in who complement your own skills and use their expertise to complement you, to support
absolutely.
You.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I know it's difficult when you're small because you've literally got to do everything. But as soon as you can, have a plan to say, as soon as I can afford it, they're doing the wages, you know, or I'll put the PR and marketing out to that person.
Yes, quite. Indeed, and many people would have an assumption that a garden centre business is seasonal, and so with a seasonal business that you'd have fluctuations in income throughout the year.
Yeah,
is that the case? How do you get through that? How do you cope with that?
Well, traditionally the industry used to do so well in the spring relative to the annual turnover that it would keep them going all through the year. That's not the case anymore. Overheads have gone up. The amount of people employed in garden centres have gone up. So we've got to find things to keep people coming all year round. So the coffee shop's a major important part of that.
Yeah.
The Christmas department is very busy. And also we're trying to look at ways of extending the gardening season. the irony of it all is that as we've diversified, the gardening season's shortened because people don't garden for as long as they used to. They tend to come out when the sun's shining, do their garden, and then move on to something else because there's so many things to do in life now.
Right.
So it's, you know, we're always trying to find ways of extending the season, starting it earlier and then filling some of the troughs. We have a beach in the summer.
Yes, of course.
Which just came about. It was an idea I stole from somebody else, some of the best ideas from somebody else. There's no one improved on it. But the idea is we've got an area that we don't need in the summer. Summer's our quiet time, believe it or not. Spring's the busy time.
Right, okay.
So we created this beach and it just brings families in, so it's really good.
Well, so a lovely idea then that people come and enjoy.
And literally people sit on the beach.
So here we are in Sheffield, sitting on the beach. Lovely. Bees and insects are becoming a big topic, and organisations such as Friends of the Earth, for example, are talking about the importance of bees and bees being potentially threatened by certain types of pesticides as well. For the garden industry, you encourage people to plant bee-friendly plants, I suppose.
Yep.
What could people do to encourage supporting bees and wildlife?
Well, you need, from a purely sort of pollen point of view, you need flowers to flower, a range of flowers that flower for months. So you need to have the crocuses and then the daffodils and then the pansies, plus some shrubs, so you can have sort of flowers all the way through the year. And that means that if we get a mild spell and the bees come out, there's something for them to go and feed on. And simple flowers, like flat flowers, rather than double flowers, are better for bees and pollinating insects, because they can get to the nectar supply easier.
Right.
So it's just, you know, if you can have a nice, diverse garden, you'll have a lot of insects around. Some of them not good, but most, it doesn't usually matter. It's monocropping that gets bad pests. So like a field, I'm overlooking one here next to the garden centre, that could have aphids over the whole thing because there's no natural predators around. But in a normal garden, if you've got a mixture of shrubs and roses and bedding plants and herbaceous plants and fruit trees, that diversity means you've got predators in there as well as the pests.
So you don't want monoculture, you want diversity Okay, lovely, good. Well, Neil, it's been illuminating talking with you and having you on the programme again. And of course, listeners who've enjoyed your dulcet tones can hear you frequently on down the road, our friends of BBC Radio Sheffield as well.
That's right.
Now, thanks so much for coming on today, Neil Grant, Ferndale Garden Centre. And of course, best of luck with National Children's Garden Week. It sounds like a great initiative. And people can also see you in person this week at the Food Festival as well, can't they?
Yeah, we're in the Peace Gardens.
Yeah, lovely. Okay, well, Neil Grant, Ferndale Garden Centre, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you.
You're listening to Business Live on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org with me, Jamie Veitch. That was Neil Grant of Ferndale Garden Centre. And we're going to take a quick break for a track of music. And this time we will play Arcade Fire. Business Live on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org with me, Jamie Veitch. And I'm joined on the line now by James Bedford of TechNorth. James is Head of Investment Strategy. James, good morning. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, good morning. Great to be here.
So, James, I brought you onto the programme today because TechNorth has just released a really exciting, very interesting new report. It's titled The Digital Powerhouse, and it talks about how collaboration can turbocharge the northern tech economy to an enormous sum. The tune of £5.7 billion is quoted in the report. Now, that's fascinating. That's massive potential. You talk about a vibrant and rapidly growing technology scene in the north of England, but you also mention that the sector's still far from reaching its potential. How much potential is there, and how could the sector do that then?
Well, it's a huge potential. I mean, I really believe that the tech sector has the opportunity to really transform not only the economy in terms of creating new tech jobs and creating new tech businesses, but also helping to kind of catalyze that new push towards digitization across the rest of the sectors too. And the report really highlights kind of three main areas. One is around public procurement. There's things like smart cities, which are happening in every city across the north, and there's really big opportunities for the northern tech clusters to engage with that. And also there's some really big corporates based up in the north, and how do we better help those particularly smaller tech companies get onto those big supply chains. And there's also a huge amount of data stored in the north, and a huge amount of data available increasingly. And how do we access that data and make it available so that new products, new solutions can be found for businesses and public sector alike?
Right, great. So you flagged up there a number of specifics to enable productivity to increase to 5.7 billion increase in gross value added for the northern economy. Those are the figures from the report, and increasing the rate of digital self-employment too. And specifically there, you've mentioned procurement, you've talked about smart cities, smaller tech businesses getting into supply chains and access to data. What are the hurdles then that we have to overcome to make these sort of dreams come true in terms of those points? What are the barriers?
Yeah, so there are particular barriers. So I think there's barriers to lots of small businesses, you know, tech and otherwise, trying to get onto trying to access big procurement contracts in local government, say, and in government. And also trying to get onto supply chains of big corporates, because they're often excluded from because they don't meet the kind of procurement criteria, and they often some of the tech companies particularly feel that people writing procurement tenders and so on, kind of briefs, procurement briefs, they don't quite understand almost what they're asking for sometimes, and they don't actually understand what the latest thing is that could be delivered, and therefore the briefs aren't quite pitched right. And so we're suggesting things such as a better collaboration between people writing those procurement briefs and the tech sector. You know, I've spoken to people who are happy to go in and go, actually, I can give you a hand writing this, and then actually myself and other companies like me will then be in a better position to be able to tender for those, because they talk our language, we can kind of get across how impactful the solutions we can deliver are. And it's also about perhaps getting away from that, from, for example, Sheffield wants to become a new smart city, instead of trying to do a huge kind of procurement process to get on, which would effectively end in you getting a huge IBM or another big IT company to deliver lots of smart city solutions. It's actually kind of breaking that down and actually thinking, how do we go about this in a different way? And actually, shall we instead just say, what we're trying to solve is X, Y, and Z, and then look to work with the tech community to come up with the ideas and solutions, perhaps through a hackathon, perhaps you might even look across the north and get all the different northern cities together to work with a company like Nissan up in Sunderland, so that Nissan says, actually, these are the kind of issues I've got. Let's see if we can develop some kind of accelerator which would we could work really closely with just a small handful of companies that we think have the potential to deliver those solutions, and we can help them to understand how our kind of processes work. We can give them some data, you know, a kind of closed ecosystem where they can use their skills and expertise to come up with those solutions.
Great stuff. And in fact, on procurement and on commissioning, I was taken by the phrase moving towards problem-based commissioning that you talk about in the report, and problem-based procurement. So rather than defining solutions, clarity in terms of the definition of the problem that you're trying to address, but not necessarily.
Exactly. And that's what's going to, it's going to benefit both sides. You know, it's going to mean that the tech communities are more engaged with that kind of reasoning, and that's what kind of excites them more, and that's what will get a really good solution for you, which will be kind of cheaper and will be delivered quicker too. And the other side, you know, whoever it is, if it's Nissan or if it's Sheffield City Council, are going to get a better solution from that. They're actually going to get something that works much better.
So it works for everyone. It works for suppliers. It works for people throughout the supply chain. It works for the commissioner as well. I mean, procurement is, and barriers to procurement in terms of small businesses, this isn't just a problem for tech, is it? Lots of large businesses who perhaps say they want to support small businesses and get them into their supply chains, and lots of large public sector organisations too might really want to do that. But in some ways, the sort of risk frameworks that they have, where they have to manage risk, become barriers in themselves to dealing with small and startup companies. James.
So what we're trying to do is not just kind of say, this is the kind of size of the opportunity, and here's some of the kind of opportunities potentially in the north, but these are the barriers. We've actually included in there a whole series of case studies where those barriers have been overcome.
Yes.
So that people reading it on all sides can look at that and go, actually, this can work. This has worked elsewhere. Why can't we bring this to the north? And doing that to the north is so important, because the tech sector is so key in creating those new jobs and creating this the new economic growth that we need. You know, it's really vital that we pick this up. And I've got some roundtables in the future to kind of get people around the table and take this report further.
Right, brilliant. So you can keep the momentum going here. I just wanted to pick up also on the suggestion of a procurement powerhouse social enterprise as well, linking buyers and businesses and providing, if you like, a matchmaking solution that's sustainable with a social purpose of, as a social enterprise, it would connect entrepreneurs, it would connect businesses, and it would connect buyers all together.
Yes, yeah, I think there's a real opportunity there for perhaps someone listening to go away and have a think about how this might work. There are some private sector providers already doing some of this. The problems still exist, so I think there's definitely room in the market at least for more to come in. And I think a social enterprise would work really well. I think people would get on board with that and understand that, you know, the kind of rationale behind that is a good one and a fair one. And that can make a real difference. You know, I think kind of, you know, like a lot of things like this, kind of individuals and individual companies can be the ones that actually are that catalyst for change.
Great stuff, super. And you mentioned that you have some roundtable events coming up then in June and July. Can you tell us a little bit more about those?
Very early days. I think this week we've just focused on getting the report out and getting it as widely read as possible. Yeah. We've had a really fantastic kind of take-up and a really great response. And the next stage is to get those dates in the diary, because I've already had people contact me and say, fantastic report, I really want to be part of the roundtable. I want to be part of the roundtable on the public procurement chapter or the private sector chapter. And that's exactly the kind of response I wanted. So I'm gathering those names together, and I'm going to try and find some dates in June and July. And we've already had two people kind of approach me and offer their meeting room space, because they want to have it in their building and in their city, and it's just been a really positive response. So I can't wait to have those roundtables and then, you know, try and give this report a strong legacy. Although it is a piece of thought leadership, I'm a practical person. I want this to kind of live on and these actions to be actioned.
Yes, quite. So this is all part of that momentum and turning those ideas into actions and results. You talked at the start of the interview about access to data and open data as well. That figures in a big way in the report as well, of course, and not only in terms of looking at KPIs, key performance indicators in procurement, but also you talk quite a bit about open source software as well as open data. Can you just unpack that a tiny bit for us?
Sure. So there's an increasing amount of data. I think the statistic is that the amount of data in the world doubles each year. So we're talking about huge amounts, and that data is very much underutilized. So there's things like a lot of health data stored in Leeds that could be potentially opened up in order to find to kind of be able to link all that data to potential problems, and therefore you'd be able to work out kind of solutions from that. But it's also things like car companies who have a lot of data about people's driving, and how they can release that data, and other big corporates can release data to companies in a way that is still kind of protected, so they're not just releasing it publicly, but actually recognizing that tech companies can use data in a really sophisticated way and come up with really good new products and solutions that are going to help that business. And some of it as well is around universities and science parks and things like that, and actually there's a lot of knowledge as well as data that can be better shared, and I think there's particular kind of movement towards a better kind of sharing of data and better use of data, and this report kind of sets out what some of those kind of case studies are. So there's things the Set Squared partnership, which is kind of partnership between universities,
yes,
to kind of link them into startups, and we suggest pooling resources of university outreach teams, so each university isn't always just working by itself and reaching out into industry. Actually, you kind of get all the northern universities together, or at least a collection of them, and that together is a much more kind of compelling piece to university. I was talking to someone who works at Sage the other day, and they were saying that they've done exactly that. They've got universities together because they are big enough to be able to do that, and have been talking to them about various things, including skills and so on. That would be the kind of thing that would work really well.
Great. Okay. Super. Now you're going to be flagging up various issues from the report in sort of ongoing blog pieces on the Tech North. website, and you've been writing about aspects of the report there. Now, many of our listeners, of course, will have come across Tech North already, but some may not have done. And just for those who haven't come across Tech North, established to support the tech sector, because, of course, it's so vitally important for future economic growth in the north of England. And tell us a little bit more about the work that Tech North's doing, and then we'll give people the website address so they can find out more.
Fantastic, yeah. Tech North has been set up less than a year now, and we've already got several initiatives up and running. We've run Northern Stars, which was a competition to find the best Northern Star companies in the north of England. And we had 10 winners last year, and we've taken them off to South by Southwest conference in Texas and down to London to meet investors and all over the place, and they've had a really, really fantastic experience. We're doing that again this year, and we'll likely be back in Sheffield trying to find the Northern Stars of the future. And we have the Founders Network, which is where tech founders can get together, share experiences, and have some really great course content to learn about how better run your business and et cetera, et cetera. I'm establishing a co-investment fund that will take a piece of public money and invest alongside private sector, leveraging in lots of private sector partners and trying to be a kind of hub for investment into tech companies in the north of England, which I think is really vital.
Because access to finance has been highlighted as an issue, so that co-investment fund will try and address that.
Exactly, and I think this report is almost a kind of a slight kind of counterbalance to that, because I think what we recognise is that, you know, investment is really, really important to help your company grow, but actually, you know, market opportunities like this are also really important, particularly if you're going to make your first product locally and then you're going to take that and go take your smart city product and go around the world selling it. So I think investment is really important, and skills and talent is really important too. So we're developing a skills and talent program, which will be kind of launching in the next few months.
Great. So that will sit alongside these other programs already established or already making an impact. But skills and talent can be supported even more. So people can find out about the Founders Network and the Northern Stars, of course, on the Tech North website. They can also download the new report, the Digital Powerhouse report that we've been talking about today, James. You can give out the address for the Tech North website if you'd like to, please.
Yes, it's technorthhq.com.
Super. So you can find all details there. You're also on Twitter, of course, aren't you? Tech North HQ on Twitter as well.
We are indeed, and we're on LinkedIn and Facebook too. So
lovely.
Great to have everyone come and have a look at what we can deliver for you.
Superb. Well, James Bedford, Head of Investment Strategy at Tech North, thank you very much for joining us on the programme today. It's been great to find out more about the report. James, thank you.
Pleasure, Jamie. Thank you.
You're listening to Business Live, Sheffield Live 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org. My name's Jamie Veitch. That was James Bedford of Tech North. We'll have a quick track of music now. We're going to have a bit of Bowie. Let's dance. This is Business Live, Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org with me, Jamie Veitch. So on today's programme, we've heard from Tech North. We've had James Bedford. He's the Head of Investment Strategy at Tech North. And he's been talking about a new report, which was launched this week, which talks about a potential £5.7 billion impact in terms of the increase in gross value added for the northern economy if we can raise productivity for tech workers and increase the rate of digital self-employment. The report published this week goes into a number of ways that the north, the tech industry, the tech sector, and local industries in the region, including retail, logistics, manufacturing, alongside the public sector, can work together to do that, with health, with education, with the local government sectors as well. The report says that the North's tech companies can play a vital role in helping the region across the North to cope with the oncoming wave of digitization, in which more industries are likely to face the same fate that the media and publishing sectors have already had to deal with. And it highlights existing examples of local collaboration in manufacturing, in health, and elsewhere. Now, if you want to find out more about that report, you can download it at the Tech North website, which is technorthhq.com. And of course, if you just tuned into the programme and you've missed the interview with James Bedford, in which he's talked all about the report and its recommendations, and crucially, how Tech North feels that those can be achieved, then you can catch the podcast of this programme, which will be up on the Sheffield Live website from about 11 a.m. today. All you need to do is go to sheffieldlive.org, find radio shows, then look up Business Live, and then you'll find the podcast of today's show, the 27th of May. Also on the show today, we've had Neil Grant of Ferndale Garden Centre talking about the business of running a garden centre and National Children's Garden Week, so you can catch that too. And of course, you could also find last Friday's programme, in which we had the Federation of Small Businesses, Neville Martin from FSB, talked about the Northern Powerhouse, whether it's all hot air. And he said the government's taking a divide and conquer approach to northern cities in the interview. Now, if you missed that, again, catch it, the 20th of May programme, which also featured Hannah Durade of The Great Escape, Sheffield's biggest real-life escape room game. And, of course, it featured Liam, Rena, Sabrine and Parveen of a fantastic local social enterprise called Upscribe. That's there. Now, this programme will be back on air next Friday from 9 a.m. through to 10 a.m, so tune in then. And of course, remember, you can get involved yourself. We're always keen to hear from you, and you can email me directly, jamie@sheffieldlive.org, or text me, 07 904 272 200. We're on Twitter at Sheffield Live, and I'm on Twitter at Jamie Veach as well. And if you're starting, if you're running a business or a social enterprise, you're a social entrepreneur, you're an entrepreneur, you're thinking about becoming one, we're keen to hear from you, whether it's your problems, your challenges you want to address, your suggestions for who we should interview or topics we should cover. Then simply get in touch and you might end up on air. Now, if you are a social entrepreneur, then a couple of things that are coming up that might be of interest to you. There's a social enterprise research project going on into legal structures and their selection, selecting appropriate legal structures, which might have wide-ranging and profound implications for investment and funding options and trading opportunities. So a research study is starting by Jules O'Dor at Sheffield Hallam University, summer 2016-17. They want to engage with social enterprise leaders and people who can provide advice in order to examine the decision choices made by social enterprises. Now, if you want to get involved, if you're a senior leader in your organisation, then all you need to do is contact Jules O'Dor at Sheffield Hallam University by email j.odor@shu.ac.uk. Also, as I mentioned at the start of the programme, the Sheffield Social Enterprise Network is looking for a chair. They're recruiting for a chair. You can find the details of the job description. Deadline for applications is the 10th of June, and more, of course, on the Sheffield Social Enterprise Network website, which is ssen.org.uk. Find out there, and in fact, the chair is particularly at ssen.org.uk/opportunities, so take a look there. Right, it's time to play out with a track of music before the fantastic folk programme, which is on Sheffield Live every Friday from 10 a.m. through to noon. Thank goodness it's folk, so of course, stay tuned for that. We're going to play out with a little bit of Bright Season, and the track is My Mother Taught Me How to Waltz.